This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Shamai, hello and welcome to In the Spotlight, a podcast from the lifestyle team at Wales Online, where we sit down with some of the biggest and best names in showbiz. We'll be finding out where our guests got their big break and also some of the struggles they faced along the way. I'm your host, Sam Cook, and in this episode, I'll be chatting to Monster Films' Rick Hall and David Howard about Channel 4 documentary, The Real Serpent. So firstly, both of you, congratulations on the documentary. I watched it last night, all three episodes, because obviously they've dropped now on Channel 4, dedicated to the cause. And it is shocking. It's edgy as seat stuff. I mean, what have people been saying to you about it so far? Rick, we'll come to you first.
I think people are kind of amazed that Charles Sobhraj is now a free man and moving around Europe and the world freely. People are kind of quite bemused that he's decided to sit down and try and tell his side of things and his truth, really.
And at one point in the film, he leaves you a voice message. I mean, what is that like? You receive a voice message from this serial killer?
Well, obviously, you know, in order to bring a project like this off the ground, really, to get it off the ground, you know, you have to develop trust, some form of trust with everyone that you make a documentary with. You know, if people don't trust you as filmmakers, and whatever that is, we're very clear. We said we'll let him, put his facts there, you know, as long as he's, you know, it would be agreed to be challenged vigorously by, and he was, as he says in the programme, by the best. So we got the best team behind, some on camera, some off camera. But in order to build that trust, obviously, I've been speaking to him on the phone for 8 years. I've, you know, visited him in prison in 2017. And because we thought he was getting out of prison before he did. I always kind of knew his sentence would be over by 2024. But around 2019, it seemed that he might not be getting out of prison as soon as he thought. I hadn't spoken to him as much as I had in 2016, 17, 18 for a while. But you obviously develop forms of, you know, relationships with everyone that you work with. And so, yeah, it wasn't a call out of the blue from someone I didn't know, really. So,
and David, it's an interesting topic. I mean, we all saw The Serpent when the drama came out a couple of years ago. Why did you want to get this story out there? Why did you think it was so interesting to kind of tell this story?
I made a film about 8 years ago for Channel 4 called Interview with the Murderer. And when we were looking for a follow-up for that, we were looking for an interesting subject matter that not only had a compelling story, but something that the audience would have a takeaway from in relation to maybe something that wasn't so well known, a period of history that hadn't really been explored, and a person that really hadn't been identified as somebody who should be examined and scrutinized. And Charles Sobhraj was someone that we knew from kind of some of our reading in the past. But this was not a person, not a name that had any street recognition, if you like. But, you know, kind of like we knew there was an interesting story there to be told. And then what happened in the interim was that the Serpent TV drama came out, and then suddenly everybody knew who Charles Sobhraj was. But what we wanted with the series when we made it, and I think we succeeded in that, is that we wanted it to be the antidote to the Serpent, the TV drama. The issue with TV dramas is, even though they can be obviously made with very big budgets, have a very far reach in terms of the audience, at the end of the day, they are, and they often use the card at the beginning saying based on true events, based on true characters, based on a true story, but they're not entirely truthful. And obviously, when you make a documentary, you strive for something different because the level of journalism attached to it isn't the same as is attached to doing a TV drama. And I think what we succeeded in doing this was bringing the story to the audience, but also bringing recognition to some of those victims who've never had any justice. And the whole point of doing this was to put Charles Sobhraj in a situation whereby he could be challenged by a series of law enforcement officials, even though they retired, you know, they were at the very top of their profession, in a way that's never happened during his lifetime. And I think that was very important for the program and also to give those victims a voice, because at least now he has been challenged in a sense, and that's been put on the record.
And in the film itself, you see the conversations that you have with him, David. What was it like actually chatting to the man himself? I mean, you touch on it in the film that people have said that he's, you know, black behind the eyes. You know, there's no sort of emotion there. But what was he actually like as a man?
I think what we have to remember is, you know, the people who talk about him being black behind the eyes and having no emotion, they're the ones who experienced him 50 years ago. When he was a very young man. Obviously now he's nearly 80 years of age. And so kind of like at 80 years of age, he's quite a different character. So he's much more accessible, if you like, and much more willing to talk. So we spent quite a lot of time with him. And during that period, obviously, as Rick said, you build up a level of trust and a working relationship with somebody. And by doing that, you actually get access to them and you're able to ask them questions that they haven't been asked before in a way they haven't been asked before. And that's what happened when we were doing the observational documentary stuff. Even though it might look like we're on a road trip around Europe, the reality is Charles Sobhraj was asked some very difficult questions in some picturesque settings. And that gives it quite a different dynamic to being in an interview room with a detective or in a clinical setting with a psychologist. But it doesn't mean that the questions that were asked or the answers that were given were any less revealing or demanding.
I think possibly more so, as Charles Sobhraj has done in lots of interviews in the past, but much more formally in a studio setting, which the stuff with our detectives and psychologists were more formal for him. But it's when you're, you know, you spend a few days with someone and you're constantly asking them things, you get, you know, a very different, less guarded response, really. So I think you can see that in the film.
And I suppose much like journalists, as filmmakers, you have to reserve judgments on people and you know, their situations. Would you say that your opinion of Charles Sobhraj changed throughout the process as to what your preconceived kind of impressions of him were?
The most important thing to have when you do these sorts of programmes and deal with these sorts of subjects and interview individuals such as Charles Sobhraj is that you have to maintain an air and an objective of pure neutrality. Your aim and your purpose is to have the facts, present the facts, and create an environment where answers can be given to long outstanding questions. And at the end of the day, it's up for the audience to determine whether he's guilty or not guilty, what they think of him as an individual. And for us, that's the most important thing, to maintain neutrality and create the environment where those challenging questions can be asked and the answers can be delivered.
And at the end of the film, it's said that a file was delivered to police. I mean, talk to us a little bit more about kind of, not necessarily, but what you gathered, but sort of, so all that information, how will that kind of, will you just show the documentary now to police, or how does that work?
That's more a question to ask somebody such as Gary Copson, who was the former Gore commander of the Metropolitan Police, who was one of the lead detectives in the homicide squad at the time, and indeed is one of the key people who questioned Charles Sobhraj in the film. So that's more of a question for him, and they haven't handed over their file yet. And I think, you know, that's something that will come in the future once the film has been completely broadcast on television.
Was that always the intention to almost kind of get this man to answer again?
No, in the sense that when Gary and Jackie and Paul Britton came aboard, obviously they've spent their entire lives, their professional lives, working for the police and working in the justice system. As they became more involved in the programme, it was a cause that they took upon themselves to forward, if you like, in advance.
So as filmmakers, we kind of, you know, we remain neutral so that both sides, if you like, trust us to allow them to develop, you know, their, with Jackie and Gary and Paul their lines of inquiry, and with Charles Sobhraj, you know, that he would be heard. And, you know, we're not kind of gearing up one way or the other, really. We're there to get the, let the team that we gathered to do their work properly, really.
And as I mentioned earlier, the most important thing, the crucial thing, is to create an environment where the facts can be laid out in a way that hasn't been done before. And then from that, sort of decisions can be made by everybody involved in the film.
And sort of looking at the production company itself, Monster Films, you guys have worked on a lot of projects within this genre. It's very much kind of, you know, your thing. What, why was the interest there for you, you know, from a filmmaking standpoint?
Well, we don't just make true crime. We always try to make stories that have an interest and, you know, in the public interest. I think it has, for us, this had a public interest because not only, as I mentioned earlier, it's, you know, a fascinating period of history that hasn't really been covered enormously. It's a story that there are many unanswered questions about. And, you know, hopefully the film can go some way to answering some of those questions. And as I said, again, bring some kind of direct sort of, if not closure to some certain questions, certainly advance, you know, kind of like the story in a way that the drama, for example, didn't do. You know, kind of like, it's not on the shelf. Now this story's out there. The man himself has been given the opportunity to speak. He's been challenged. What will happen next?
Have you spoken to Charles Sobhraj since the episode went out, or did he get sent the film?
No, we haven't spoken to him, and he hasn't seen the film.
Right, okay. Do you reckon he's going to get in touch?
There's no doubt we might hear from him at some point in the future, and that the film will be out there, you know, kind of like it'll eventually be seen around the world, so we will see it at some stage, I'm sure. But just so you know, this TV drama, The Serpent, he has not watched, so... It's
really?
Yes.
That surprised me, because whenever you hear, like, about kind of serial killers, you always think, do they watch kind of... does he... I mean, he categorically denies that he even is a serial killer, but I suppose it goes back to that neutrality thing. Could you imagine a person like that doing something like that?
Well, any human being is capable of doing anything. It's always the people you suspect, you know, kind of, I think what people have to understand is, you know, kind of like... serial killers are not like Norman Bates in Psycho, you know, kind of like, just as, you know, bank robbers don't go around wearing swag bags and masks over their eyes, you know, kind of like, and when people say, what does a murderer look like? If you showed pictures of what a murderer looks like, it'd be the least expected person. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, what we are dealing is telling stories about human beings who may or may not have committed the most awful crimes and putting the situation and putting all the elements into place so the questions that have never been answered before can be answered.
And just kind of for Monster Films, what are you working on next? What have you got kind of in the pipeline? What's coming up?
We've got a number of things. Not that much true crime now. We're sort of more moving into more history, more science-based projects. And again, things we've always tried to look at things that have, you know, not only interesting to us, but stories that haven't been told that might be stranger than fiction.
Amazing. Well, both of you, thank you very much for having a chat with
me.
For all of us at Wales Aligned, Diolch yn fawr. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Diolch. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the latest TV and showbiz news by subscribing to our newsletter over at walesonline.co.uk.